private parts.
Make it a friend-only thing.
Friends, friend-only. Yeah. Welcome to the Negative World Podcast, a podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at negativeworld.org. This is episode 29, and we're recording this on Thursday, March 8th, 2012. I am one of the hosts, Guillaume, and editor as well. And with me today I have...
Joe, you may know me on the forums as NinSage, and today I'm going to be talking about special edition hardware platform.
And you have me here, my name's Anton, or better known on Negative World as Scronton, or sometimes Scrontron 3000, and I'm going to be talking about Game Boy Advance to GameCube connectivity, and a little bit of how that leads to what we're going to see on Wii U in the future.
And personally, I'm going to be talking about party games and game parties, maybe, if we've got time. Also, something about LAN parties. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, so I've got two first-time podcasters here with me today, and perhaps first-time listeners as well. Because last week I was on Radio Free Nintendo, a podcast. Yeah, I know. Like, I've got two fans here of that podcast.
I'm gonna get your autograph if I ever meet you in real life, which I'll have sometime.
Yeah,
I was gonna do that anyway, but now I have two reasons. So.
So yeah, I had the chance to be on the Radio Free Nintendo podcast, and that was really an awesome experience. If you guys don't know what Radio Free Nintendo is, go check it out. It's the best Nintendo podcast on the internet. And like, I'm not downplaying what we're doing here, but like, they were the like one of the inspirations for starting this podcast. So I hold them in very high esteem. And it was a blast to, and like, really unexpected to be on their podcast. Oh yeah, perhaps it's the first time that you're listening to the Negative World podcast. What this podcast is about, it's very simple. We have guests from the negativeworld.org community, and we each choose a topic to discuss, and we also talk about what we've been playing for the past week or so. And if you want to check out our community, like, we're very welcoming, I hope. Come on over and talk to us. Do you guys think that's good enough?
Oh, I think that's perfectly fine.
Sure. All right.
I think you sound very welcoming. You're not going to scare anybody off.
Yeah, and then I'm going to act like an asshole on the internet, on the forums.
Oh, that's possible. You could.
Classic bait and switch.
Yes.
Pretty much. But first, let's talk about what we've been playing this week. Joe, why don't you start us off?
Okay. I have been playing a couple of different games, which is unique for me. I tend to just sort of like pick one game and completely devour it, and I try not to get distracted and sidetracked by other things.
So your game was just too boring for you to keep playing it?
No, it's, you know, it's just been sort of like, well, first of all, I had been playing Kirby's Return to Dreamland. That's what I had been playing. And then I beat, you know, the normal mode, and then hard mode, which you were just talking about on that episode of RFN, right?
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the game as hard as Ninja Gaiden, right?
Gaiden, come on.
Oh, sorry, Ninja Gaiden.
Having played the Nintendo Ninja Gaidens, you know, I don't know if it's quite that difficult, but that is kind of why I stopped and started playing other things, is because, yeah, I don't know, I reached that point where, like, you know, I wasn't just breezing through the levels in typical, you know, happy-go-lucky Kirby fashion. Mm. And so, I don't know, I just started, like, I don't know, doing other stuff. But
So you stopped playing when the game actually started.
Well, actually, I should also say that my wife and I had been playing through together, and then when we got to hard mode, she totally just was like, well, rest is up to you.
So,
So
I think, quitter.
Well, you know, at least she played the first part, so she cheers me on. No, that's cool. But so yeah, I still really I like it. I think it's great that the game has the two different versions of it, so to speak. So it's like if you just want fun, easygoing platformer, you play that, and if you want a little bit of challenge, well then that's waiting for you afterwards, you know. So
did you try the challenge rooms at all?
Oh yes, the first I did them all in the normal mode, and then I've been working through them in the hard mode as they've been opening.
Right.
And yeah, I mean they're pretty much just as brutal as you described before, where you really do you have to do them very close to perfect, and as you play through them you discover that there are certain methods that the game intends you to use in order to be successful.
Right.
In them you can't just brute force them, you have to like devise a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely have to like pause and restart constantly. If you make the slightest mistake, you probably ruin the whole run.
Wow, you put that way more, you know, succinctly and clearly than I did. You should have been on Radio for Nintendo.
But I didn't reference Ninja Gaiden though, so.
Yeah. Your description of it, I see, I've never played this particular game. The only Kirby game I ever played was Epic Yarn, and I think a game that's like real twitchy and you have to restart because you screwed something up, stuff like that kind of turns me off, so I'm kind of happy I didn't really buy this game.
But, you know, like the whole kind of twitchy, super hard, you have to be perfect thing is really only in the challenge rooms,
right.
And only if you try to go for the hidden platinum medals. If it hadn't been for Triforce Bun learning about the platinum medals on GameFAQs, I wouldn't have known about them. And,
I was just going to say, my wife and I, we didn't even know. We were listening to the podcast you were on last week, and you said that, and we both looked at each other. We were like, platinum medals?
You guys probably got your gold and like, yep, that's it. I'm the best.
Heck yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's how I went too. I was like, wow, okay, that certainly was challenging. And then Matt, aka Triforce Bun, is just like, oh yeah, I got these platinum medals. And I'm just, fuck you. No, I like Matt. Yeah, so what else have you been playing, Joe?
With my wife, the game that we've been playing together lately is Professor Layton and the Last Spectre for the DS. We managed to play it together on my luxurious DSi XL, so we can both see it.
Nice.
just perfectly. And I really, you know, I know a lot of people have said about the Layton series that it, you know, it's kind of the same game that comes out again and again, and that people have said the quality of the puzzles has gone downhill or something. First of all, for me, I don't know how you would even judge quality of puzzles. Like to me, they're all just random ass puzzles. I mean, I don't notice any real difference in the quality or anything. But I'm just a sucker for that series. I fully admit it. I would probably, if they made, you know, if they kept doing this for 15 more years, I'd probably still be there buying them. So I have no complaints. I think it's a great game.
Cool. And you've been playing something on 3DS?
Oh, yes. Resident Evil Revelations, which I am crazy about as a longtime fan of the franchise, you know, back since the PlayStation 1 days. And, you know, I played Resident Evil 4. I thought it was amazing. I played Resident Evil 5. I was rather disappointed. Yeah.
I actually loved that game. I thought it was fantastic.
I mean, I don't know. We probably don't want to get sidetracked into Resident Evil 5, but all I can say is Revelations took, you know, my favorite bits of the original games and my favorite bits from the more modern renditions, and I feel they're all in one package. So
yeah, like so, your favorite bit from the first game was draining a bathtub to find a key.
Oh
at
my
the bottom.
Goodness! I couldn't believe
they literally.
Yeah, it was in the demo, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was. I couldn't tell if that was just like a like. Are they serious or are they just referencing that or you know?
But yeah. Oh, sorry.
I was gonna say that whole drain the bathtub thing is switched a little bit in the game because I started over twice. If you drain the bathtub first, it's not there and it's taped under the toilet. And if you check the toilet first, it's under the bathtub. So it's
I was wondering about that because when I played, because I played once through casual, and then I just finished playing through normal, and yeah, it was in a different, it was under the toilet seat, and I was like, what, did I remember it wrong, or?
I just thought, who tapes a screwdriver to this toilet seat? It's one of the weirdest
things.
Yeah,
that was a little gross.
You should mention your article.
Yes, I wrote a little piece, the second installment of hopefully something that will continue on Negative World each month, called The Plot Thickens, in which I'm looking at elements of plot and narrative in games that might not necessarily get attention for that sort of thing, which basically means that my articles, no one will care about them because everyone says, well, why would I want to read about the plot in that game? I just shoot stuff or I just jump over stuff. But you know. But anyway, so that's the kind of stuff that interests me. So I wrote about that Revelations for the second one.
Yeah, I feel bad because I really really like the first one was about
Nano Assault. Yep.
Nano Assault, and I just in Shmup, I actually think that plot gets in the way. I you know, if I could shoot it, I would.
And I think. I think the majority of people feel that way. I totally understand.
And in this game, like I still haven't picked it up yet. My backlog is so shameful. I can't exactly, you know, play the game and then comment on it, on the plot, you know.
It's a good game. I have it. I didn't beat it. I kind of gave up on it and started Tales, but it is a good game. I have things I like and things I dislike about it, but... overall, it's a good package.
And Anton, speaking of Tales of something-something?
Yeah, more Tales of the Abyss or Tales of the Abysmal, depends on whether or not you like it. But yeah, Tales of the Abyss. I never played the original PS2 version. I was a big fan of Symphonia on GameCube, played it for about 200 hours, and a very huge fan of the Symphonia 2 on Wii. I thought it was lovely. And when I saw this game was being released in America, I knew I had to get it. And unfortunately, Nintendo of America delayed it to February instead of November because they wanted people to play Mario, and I guess that kind of got me to buy Mario. But this game, it's good. It reminds me a lot of Tales of Symphonia with a different kind of graphics. I think Symphonia is more polished than this game, but fundamentally what you get in Tales of the Abyss is a big world with a very crazy story, kind of confusing at times, a lot of mechanics, and simple gameplay. It's just kind of one of those RPGs that you have to just enjoy the ride. Have any of you guys played any recent Japanese RPGs?
Well, I did play the start of Xenoblade before I got sidetracked by shiny objects. I did genuinely like it, though. And before that, I played through Radiant Historia.
Okay. What about you, Joe?
You know, I can't even think of the last one that I would have played, which that used to be my favorite genre, but I guess, you know, as time constraints have changed, I can't even remember the last one I played.
I suppose at least Nano Stray doesn't have, like, teenagers trying to save the world.
No.
I like to kind of put context to this game. Have any of you guys played a Dragon Quest game at all?
Original?
All right, you know, like, Dragon Quest games are kind of... the story segments are kept to a minimum, and it's kind of just slow, grindy gameplay for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this game is pretty much the exact opposite. It's a lot of story, a lot of cutscenes with voice acting, and my thought on that is that it's voice acting. It's neither good nor bad. But there's not as much gameplay here as an RPG as you would get in something like Dragon Quest. Because the fights, they go very quickly, because it's a very active, kind of like a fighting game type fighting, with skill slots and combos, and it's very, very quick and snappy, and that's a good thing. But the bad thing is that you find most of your time while you play the game is sitting through cutscenes, and I think that can kind of get boring after a while, because for about an hour straight, I can just walk to a city, and I'll talk for a bit, they tell me to go to another city, and I just walk there ignoring all the fights, not because I want to, just because it's very easy to. And you talk to more people, then you just keep going back and forth and talking. And there's the gameplay here just seems like you're walking around talking to people. But there are segments where you're doing nothing but fighting for an hour straight. But I do think the game kind of tips towards a lot of story and cutscenes. And if you like that kind of stuff in a Japanese RPG, this is a fantastic game. But of course, if you played any Tales game and you like a Tales game, this game's perfect. This has become my killer app for the 3DS. before it came out, my most played game was Dragon Quest IX on 3DS, and I had about 60 hours on that. This one's coming very close. I'm at 40 now. This is my most played 3DS game, not the most played on the system. But, you know, I've only had it for 2 weeks, and I dumped almost 40 hours. It's a fantastic game. You have to be able to tolerate JRPGs, though, and a lot of people don't. This is a very traditional, cliche JRPG, and if you're into that, you'd love this game.
Okay. I don't mind talking to a lot of people in towns, but the writing has to be good, and they have to be saying something. Or are they just, like, talking just to hear themselves talk?
Well, one good thing this game does is it has the skits. If you guys have played a Tales game, you know about the skits. And you just push start and you watch a little segment go, and they talk about little stuff that has nothing to do with the main story, unless you want it to. Just adds a little bit more depth. And what that allows is that the main dialogue in the story and all the voice acting can be quick and to the point, and it just explains things very flat out to you. And if you want more depth in the characters or in the story, or just have the party's take on the given situation or crisis that just happened, just push start and, you know, watch it go through. The problem with the skits is that it's timed, and the text automatically skips to the next line whenever it feels like it wants to. Sometimes it goes fast, sometimes it goes slow, and sometimes I get very bored because I seem like I'm reading much faster than they want to skip through the dialogue. So for the most part, I usually just push start, let the skit go, and watch TV or something while it's going through and don't pay attention. If it's a good one, you know, and you'll pay attention. But sometimes the titles are like, oh, this food was delicious, and they'll talk about the meal they just had after a fight. Those are one of the ones I don't pay attention to. But yeah, the dialogue, it's written very, very well.
I'm not sure if I'm convinced. I think I might skip this one.
But it's from a gameplay standpoint, it's a Tales game. If you've played Symphonia on the GameCube, you will like this game. It's really picking up towards the end where I'm at now, and you know, the world is kind of like in crisis mode, and you're really doing some big changes, and you're going to some great set pieces for the game to take place. And I kind of trudge through hour 20 to 30. It's kind of, you know, go to this city, talk to these people, keep going back and forth, the unexciting part. But it's really getting good now. Like I said, if you're a fan of JRPGs, you're a fan of Tales of Symphonia, pick this game up if you have a 3DS. If you're thinking about getting it down the line, you should probably get it now. It's going to be a very hard game to find in the future.
Nice. All right. Well, I guess it's my turn to talk. Yes. But I don't really have anything interesting to say. Like, I've been busy doing non-gaming stuff and some gaming stuff, but not interesting gaming stuff.
Let's hear about it.
Yeah, sure. I went to this LAN party with friends who are way more into PC gaming than I am, and it's kind of scary how impossible it is to, like, you would think that between gamers, like, we would find something in common to talk about, but they were talking about, like, you know, Intel screwing over AMD as far as processors go, and like all sorts of stuff that I really didn't know about and didn't really care about. And they were like way into Skyrim mods and things like that. And I just like, hey,
not my language.
Does anyone know about Kirby? Kirby. But yeah, we played some StarCraft 2, and I've been playing that with a friend of mine online. We mostly stick to... I pick the Terrans because I haven't learned to play as anyone else, and we just try to fight harder and harder AI. It's impressive how little StarCraft has changed in like 15 years. It's the exact same game, except it's a little bit more user-friendly. And one would hope so. Like they certainly learned a few lessons from, making games for 15 years. And by they, I mean Blizzard.
When did StarCraft 2 come out? How recently?
Apparently, it came out 2 years ago.
Okay.
And the people I was playing with last weekend, they had been playing for 2 years, and it showed. But I only picked up my copy when the game was on sale around Christmas. So. Yeah, I was not at their level, let's just say. And I got my ass kicked pretty easily.
Were they kind of hazing you? Like, hey, he's the new guy, let's just crush him in about 30 seconds.
No. They were pretty good about it, but clearly I was not presenting a challenge at all. Yeah, what is there to say? Like, I'm a noob. I didn't really have any strategies except make lots of marines and make lots of tanks and hope that he doesn't have airships yet. So yeah, like they would use actual tactics, like drawing my attention somewhere and then hitting my base. And I'm still not at that level. I'm still trying to learn all the shortcut keys and. Yeah, once you know those things, like then you can work on your strategy. So I'm gonna have to keep playing, I guess.
Do you have any previous experience with real-time strategy games? Like, are you pretty good at them, or?
No, I used to play the first StarCraft, and
Okay.
that's pretty much the last one that I played, like
Yeah.
the last real-time strategy game. And then I haven't really been PC gaming for over a decade.
Okay.
Yeah, and generally, I think I prefer turn-based strategy games.
Okay, yeah,
I
same here.
I'm big into Advance Wars and or games like Civilization, because then you can really take your time and you can know exactly where you want your units to go and how you're gonna attack and all of that stuff.
Right, it's more of a chess approach.
Yeah, and that's definitely my preferred genre.
Yeah, well, you have more experience than me with RTS. I think my only experience is Command and Conquer, and the strategy was just playing as Germans and raising a bunch of dogs and seeing how many it took to take over an airplane base. That's usually what I did.
Yeah.
The Germans were actually the good guys. They were in the Allied forces in the Red Alert. You were playing as the Russians.
Oh, the Russians. It's been a very long time. And was it the Americans that had Tanya that walked around?
Yep.
All right.
It's funny because I think in this conversation we've covered every RTS that I've ever played because it was
Yes.
Command and Conquer, Red Alert, the first StarCraft, and then I think the first Warcraft. That's about it.
Well, it's okay if we don't really talk about a whole lot of real-time strategy games because it's not exactly Nintendo related. And the other game that I have played during that LAN party was also not Nintendo related, and it was Serious Sam 3 or Serious Sam BFE, Big Fucking Edition. That game is pretty action-packed, but all it is really it I was once I died and it happened pretty quickly. I could view the action from an overhead camera, and I was looking at my teammates carrying on without me. And it really looked like they were playing a kind of Geometry Wars, but in first person. Like it was exactly like wave after wave of enemies, and you just
Mow them down.
shoot at them. Yeah, and I guess it's an interesting game. Like it's really made to be played. Well, co-op for sure, and also like just like quick game after quick game because you're always gonna fail. Unlike Left 4 Dead, where you do mow down hordes of zombies that keep coming all the
Yeah.
time, but you're actually going towards a goal. You're going towards a safe house. In Serious Sam, you just like you eventually you're gonna end up dead. Maybe it's a message, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's something to think about.
What you were describing about when you died, it had an overhead view and it looked like Geometry Wars, it kind of reminded me of that talk from Ubisoft about that Killer Freaks from Outer Space, where one guy gets like an
Oh.
overhead view and they control the horde coming in.
Oh yeah.
It kind of
Yeah,
reminded me of
actually. Oh. Well, wow, you brought it back to Nintendo.
that.
I guess a Serious Sam on the Wii U could actually do that. That would be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, if it's got a strong online component, like if Nintendo actually is up to the task of doing online right this time, I wouldn't mind playing Serious Sam on the Wii U.
And that remains to be seen.
Yep.
I wanted to talk about special edition platforms, and I think I was primarily inspired because somewhere in my travels across the interwebs this week, I saw the picture of all the different versions of the 3DS that have been released in Japan as of now. And yeah, definitely in Japan, not across the world. Mm. But it got me thinking because I had always considered this idea of like the unique, you know, game specific platform as something that was maybe silly is not the right word, but at the very least something that was not for me. I always felt that my comical OCD was going to interfere too much, and like the idea of playing like a sci-fi game on a Zelda platform would just be too like dissonant of a concept, and I wouldn't be able to get into it. But I didn't get a 3DS at launch. I waited not for any specific reason. I just, you know, the games that I wanted to play were not out yet. But as Christmas time was approaching, you know, Mario Kart 7 and 3D Land were going to be coming. So I thought, all right, you know, I'm gonna get one. Time to pick out a color, you know. But the original, like, what was it? Black, blue, and I think red was available by Christmas.
Red was available in September, I think, when Star Fox came out.
You know, I wanted to hold out for, like, I was hoping that the white one that they have in Japan, I was hoping that was going to come to the States in time for Christmas, but it just never happened. So they had the Zelda one, the Zelda Special Edition 3DS that was going to be coming available. I think it was, like, Black Friday or something like that when they were going to start selling it. And so my wife was saying, like, oh, it's so pretty looking, it's so cool, and some friends of mine that like have like the Zelda DSs were like, oh, that's so nice. So the more they said that, the more I was like, you know what? That is pretty cool looking. So I picked it up. That's the one I got. And I just got to say, I've been so pleased with that purchase. I can't believe how, first of all, when I do play any other game, I completely forget that it's got Zelda on the outside. But then when you close it up and put it down, it's just this like gorgeous, you know, quasi work of art on your system. So I just thought, you know, I would get your guys' opinion stories if you'd ever have there been any that you guys have purchased in the past or ones that you've been interested in or.
Whenever I listened to that recent RFN episode with Guillaume on it, where they talked about regretting your 3DS purchase, I bought mine at launch. The launch games I bought were Street Fighter and Pilot Wings. I don't own either of those anymore. I kind of sold them to a friend. I didn't really like them. But I first regretted buying a 3DS when that Zelda one came out, actually. The Zelda 3DS is a very good-looking system. And I told myself if I could do it again, I would have waited for the Zelda 3DS, even with the Ambassador games. But that was until Minish Cap was announced to be an Ambassador game. Then I'm like, oh, nope, I do not regret it at all. I love my Minish Cap on it.
You take the Zelda game instead of the Zelda hardware.
Yeah, I'll take the Zelda game. I kind of do like having four digital Zelda games on my 3DS. But I like the Zelda one, but I think you have the second best 3DS because for some weird reason that Dragon Quest Slime 3DS in Japan is that thing is amazing. I love
it's
that
nice.
3DS. It is. It's very nice. It's the white one, I believe, right?
Yep, it is
and
white.
Yeah, the blue slimes and the random metal ones. That system's very good looking. I like the Slime 3DS.
Well, and that's another reason why I kind of wanted to talk about this, because like in looking over this image with all the different 3DSs, it's like, oh, I want that one, and I'll take that one, and you know, it's like, they're totally getting me with their marketing, you know.
People who listen to the podcast can probably guess from the fact that I said in the previous episode that I'm not a collector, and I don't really, you know, like toys, or I don't put up video game posters in my room or anything. Mm-hmm. I'm more in the camp who doesn't care. And I think that if I had a special edition handheld or something like that, I wouldn't really mind. I would probably even enjoy it, but I would not like cherish it or As long as the system can play the games, I'm fine.
Do you guys think that special editions, do you think that they're made because companies are trying to like do like a little fan service to their audience, or do you think they're just purely like money grab? Hey, here's the thing you bought last year, but now it's got a M for Mario on it. Why don't you buy it again?
I think it's money grab. You just actually reminded me of something locked deep in my consciousness for whenever the GameCube era was around. Usually when I get a new system, when I was a kid, I was really foolish. I didn't have that much money. So when GameCube came out, I found myself, you know, selling N64 stuff to my friends. And it's one of my big regrets. When I was younger, I used to trade in games. And
even
I remember
you just told us about the 3DS games.
Just
you sold.
Told you about it. Yeah. Well, in my defense, I hated those games. But like these games back then, I loved them. I sold Majora's Mask to my friend Ocarina of Time. So when GameCube came around, you know that Ocarina of Time Master Quest came out. Loved it, but it made me want to play Majora's Mask. And when that collector's edition of Zelda came out, I remember the first way you can get it was through a special GameCube bundle. And I guess that would be a collector's edition bundle, because I actually, you know, saved up money and went out to the store and bought a second GameCube. And that's not as crazy as it sounds, because my little brother played GameCube a lot, so we kept one in the basement, one in the room. But yeah, Nintendo got me to spend an extra, I think, $150 at the time to buy a second GameCube just for that Zelda Collector's Edition.
But couldn't you just, like, subscribe to Nintendo Power and get the same thing?
Yeah, they announced that after, and I ended up doing that too. And this is a little funny, because you said you're not a collector. I now own 4 of those Zelda Collector's Discs.
Wow.
3 of them are still sealed, and I should have sold them before Virtual Console came around, because they were going on eBay for about $150 each, and then whenever the digital versions came out, it kind of dropped. But yeah, I still have a couple of those lying around in case someday I want to sell them.
I was trying to do a little background research for this topic, and I came across GameCube that said it was a limited edition Zelda. Is that the platinum colored one that you got?
No, this one is just a regular black one. I don't think the platinum one came out. It's not a special system. It was just a collector's edition bundle to get that Zelda disc.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
That's really all it was.
Okay, but didn't it have like a one of those coaster things that you're supposed to put on top of the GameCube? Like, remember when Metroid Prime came out?
They made a
bundle, and then like you had this special like cover art or something.
When I was looking these up, there was like 6 different GameCubes, and they all looked exactly the same, except the little ring on top had a picture of whatever game you were buying.
To kind of foreshadow what I'm talking about, there's a Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles GameCube. There's a Tales of Symphonia GameCube. And yeah, if I had money back then, maybe I would have bought some of those because I was a crazy kid. But nowadays, I would say no. Unless that Mr. Slime 3DS comes to America, I think I'd buy it.
But yeah, I guess those special plate covers were a proto version of the faceplates for the Xbox 360.
Yeah.
Does that still exist? Like, I haven't...
I was gonna say, I have not heard about that in so many years.
When Xbox 360 came out, when we had LAN parties in high school still, my friend had an Xbox 360, and he had that wooden panel one to cover it. And I think the year after 360 came out, no one cared about that stuff. It just kind of died. And the new 360s don't even have removable covers.
Right.
I remember that the Game Boy Micro had a set of faceplates like that, but at least they also served as a screen protector. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was actually useful. But yeah, like the faceplate thing, like what the hell? Like, it's just a console. I guess if you really, really, like if you're really obsessive about the look of your entertainment center, then yeah, sure. But like camo, Halo... faceplates? Really?
It's for the hunters, if you want the camo one. You got your gun rack next to it, you got the hunter, the camo, Xbox.
maybe, you bring it for camping, and you cook on your 360, because that's what that thing, yeah. I don't know. Like, what do you guys think about, like, there's a thread in the Good of World about the new 3DS colors and bundles for Japan, and XBob 42, you know, our beloved PC fanatic on Negative World says, decals and paint jobs on your game system, so sixth grade. Like, you said, Joe, that the Zelda thing was, like, really looked cool, but yeah, like, isn't it kind of just a decal, basically?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, well actually, on this one, I guess it's slightly different, because I guess, like, how can I describe it? Like the little piece of hardware where the game goes in, like that's gold colored, and the little slider is gold, and the face buttons, the text is gold. I guess I don't know where they would normally draw the line, but it's primarily just the outside of, you know, the top plate has the decal on it or whatever you'd call it. So
do you find yourself having to use a case?
Not really, because I'm just like, I'm ridiculous. Maybe this goes back to that OCD I touched on earlier, but I'm just like completely careful with all my expensive electronics. So like, I've never ever had a problem with like something getting scratched or you know, anything like that. So
there were a ton of special editions for the Game Boy Advance, and those that was like back in the day when Nintendo handhelds were actually region free.
Mm.
So have you ever been tempted to actually import?
No, I mean, the thing is, like I said, before this, I never cared. It was, like, never even on my radar. But, all the Game Boy ones, like, I had the first Game Boy, and, like, I never regretted it. You know, I remember seeing people that had, like, I think especially when the pocket ones came out, or maybe it was the color, and they had all these, like, funky colors, like, all these, like, 90s... Yeah. You know, 90s hot red colors and whatever. So
yeah, Nintendo had a Play It Loud campaign about those.
Right, exactly. So, but I never. Really, but even then, green.
I had that lime green.
Yeah, it's that's your color right here on Negative World too. That's the
yeah. I love I love green. Like it was complete chance because I won it through like my local grocery store. Had a drawing, like, I don't know, I got lucky, and I think that the person who gave me the Game Boy expected, like, a little kid to have one, and I showed up, and I was, like, 22, and they were just like, really? Like, she looked like she felt like she should have picked a new name.
Yeah, I felt that way when I was 23 buying Pokemon White, so...
And they had a clear one, and usually a lot of people liked the clear... case, like either like Nintendo 64 controller or clear Game Boy.
Oh yeah, there was a while there where that was almost like high tech in and of itself, just to show the guts of something. It was like, yeah. Oh, now I really appreciate this processing because I can see it.
I actually did have the clear Game Boy Pocket. Yeah, I had the clear one when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess one more thing we can say about limited editions is that they really have to be careful about the timing of when they release it and the franchise or the license that they choose. Because I remember listening to a 1UP podcast. Scott Sharkey used to be on it. And that guy also used to have his own game store. And he was saying how, you guys remember the limited edition Pikachu N64?
Yeah, I do, yes.
It was blue, and it had a yellow Pikachu on it.
Like was it like a big giant face or something?
It was, I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure it was like a full Pikachu. And I think it came out like to promote AU Pikachu.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really late in the N64's life, and Scott Sharkey was... telling people how they couldn't sell that system for anything. You know, they had a whole, like, 23 in the back room, and no one would touch them.
I'm looking at a picture of it now. It's got a huge plastic Pikachu on it, like 3D, like, raised Pikachu, and it looks like the power button is a Pokeball.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Do you think, and I just thought about this for 3DS, the advent of all these recent collector's edition or limited edition 3DSs with different paint jobs, you think this is a way of Nintendo to kind of push out and dump all their old components of the 3DS to kind of get ready to clear factories for the new unannounced 3DS? Do you think that could be what they're doing?
I wonder how many components could they have to dump? Like, I don't know. I don't really subscribe to the idea that... I'm pretty sure they're still producing 3DSs.
Yeah.
And because the sales have picked up, mm-hmm. I don't think that there's really that much of an incentive to come out with a revision yet. So they're probably going to give us a breather and, you know, perhaps like next year we're going to see a special edition. And then everyone who's bought the original is going to have to upgrade.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to try to sell us a Wii U and a 3DS redesign. They're going to wait till that first Wii U summer drought to drop the 3DS redesign so people like us would actually buy both of them.
Makes sense.
I got to say, though, as much as limited editions don't appeal to me, hardware revisions, I have been the kind of sucker who's bought them all.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had a Fat DS. I bought it like a year and a half after it came out. And then like 3 months later, they announced the DS Lite. And of course, I had to have that because the original DS was terrible.
Yeah.
And I managed to skip the DSi, and then I went straight for the DSi XL. So that was a good thing.
I loved my XL. It's a shame I don't have it anymore.
How could you get rid of that?
This is a sensitive topic. I did not get rid of it.
You got your stuff stolen.
Yeah, my little brother and I, we had a DSi, DSi XL, Pokemon Heart Gold, Soul Silver. We're playing it, and you know, we kept them out, and we went to look for it one day, and they were gone, and so were about half of my DS games, including my Zeldas and Marios. Very mad, because I had to downgrade to a DS Lite, and no more XL. But I'm happy.
All your Pokemon's lost.
Yeah, all my Pokemon's lost. That little Pokemon pedometer thing was kind of useless. I told my buddy, I said, if Dragon Quest IX and my 200 hours game in that was stolen too, I probably would have tracked someone down and killed them. But yeah, I'm happy. Happy that didn't happen. I still have that game at least.
So they stole them out from your house?
Yeah, my brother had some shady people over the
time. Yeah.
And you know, that's just kind of how it works.
So somewhere out there, someone's raising your Pokemon.
I actually called Nintendo about this because on Club Nintendo, my DSi XL was registered, and I started getting these surveys for weird DSiWare games that I never had. So that means someone was buying them on my stolen stuff, and they're showing up at my Club Nintendo. But hey, at least I was getting coins for them. And I called Nintendo and said, hey, you know, my DSi was stolen. Is there any way you can track who bought these and where it was at? They have no way of doing it. So, yeah.
But that sounds strange to me. Like, you actually got the surveys for those games?
Yes, yeah, because my XL was tied to my Club Nintendo account, and I was getting the surveys for them. I just did one the other day. It was Hoops Arcade, $2 basketball DSiWare game.
What the hell?
Yeah, I know.
Maybe you can piece together who the suspect is based on the type of games that they're downloading.
That is true. I even
it would be a whole negative world investigation.
We should try it. I did a little thing. I went to GameStop because the box has the serial number on it, and I asked them, hey, did anybody trade this system in the serial number? You know, they never got it, so I tried.
All right. Do we have anything left to say about special editions?
I'm probably going to end up being a sucker for them in the future. That's all. Which is going to add another element of like, should I buy now or should I wait for, you know, next month's Donkey Kong banana colored
edition? That would be a good color. Yeah. All I'll say is bring that Dragon Quest Slime 3DS to America, and I think I will buy it day one. I like that system.
It is really nice.
Connectivity to the GameCube and kind of what this means for Wii U. And the two games I wanted to bring to the table, and I've played more, but the two I want to bring is Four Swords Adventure and Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. And before I get started with them, have you guys played any of the connection games? Have you interacted with it at all?
I've played Crystal Chronicles, but I did not have any sort of connectivity option. I never had a Game Boy Advance, so... Okay. And which is funny because we bought the Crystal Chronicles game and we were like all excited to play it co-op, and then we're like entering in our party names and stuff, and we're like, yeah. Wait, how do we both play? Why is this? Oh, damn it.
All I'm going to say is, for just before I get into that, that game could have been done without the Game Boy Advances. It was possible, but I'll get to that in a bit, though. What about
you? I still love the game. It was a great game, though.
Yeah, really good game.
Yeah, I didn't get into them because I was in a, you know, that Penny Arcade, that classic Penny Arcade comic where, I don't know, which like Gabe is complaining, like, why do I have to buy 4 cables and 4 GBAs to play this? And I'm going to have to buy a TV, and I'm going to have to pay 3 hookers to play with me because I don't have friends, and I'm going to have to buy a house to host this in. And so, yeah, I didn't. My friends, like these games came out when I was in college, and my friends were more into PC gaming, as we've already established. And or I had a roommate who was a good sport and who did play the Rayman 3 minigame with me, and who did try out the Tingle Tuner.
Okay.
But he was not really a gamer, so I wouldn't have been like, hey, let's play through Zelda or Final Fantasy. But I'm insanely jealous. My hope was that we would have played the Game Boy Zelda 4 Swords at the Negative World meetup, but we ended up not having time, so that's why we have to do another meetup.
Yes.
It's the only reason.
I might be getting a good job over the summer, making some decent money, and if that's the case, I'd like to come to that. And I was in the... When I thought of this topic, I was searching through GameStop.com and at their GameCube section. I still have both of the games I'm going to talk about, and I still have 3 Game Boy Advances, but no Link cables. But fortunately, they're 99 cents on GameStop.com.
I was going to say, those can't possibly be expensive.
So I'm actually going to buy 4 of them, and if I can ever make it to a Negative World meetup, I'm going to bring all 4 of them and some Game Boys and, you know, try some of that stuff out.
Oh, that's awesome.
But to get started on the first one, Four Swords Adventure, this game, it's kind of inspired by a mix between, I'd say, I'm not sure if it predates Minish Cap. Actually, yeah, it does predate Minish Cap. It's inspired by A Link to the Past and the original Four Swords. As a Zelda game, it's very non-traditional. You select levels through an overworld map, and you can keep replaying them, and you just kind of go through the game until you get to the end and beat it. It's filled with some great multiplayer puzzles, and I don't want to discuss the game that much. I want to get into the connectivity. As a single-player game, it holds up, but the fun is when you can get some friends together to play with the Game Boy Advances. And I had 2 people I used to play with, some kids in my neighborhood, or kids, people my age. You kind of get together, you put it together. One person will control 2 links, the other 2 have their own. And the TV is kind of like the main overall map of the area, kind of like how in A Link to the Past, it'll scroll a little bit or it'll stay stationary, and then when you kind of force to another screen, it completely loads another area. Mm-hmm, you guys know what I'm talking about? It's kind of like that on this, but each over area has little catacombs you can go in. And when you crawl into that, a little icon shows up on the TV screen showing that you're there, and then on your Game Boy Advance screen, you're moving around in there, so you can kind of have your own little game going on there. And the graphics change to A Link to the Past graphics on the Game Boy version. It's a little weird in that sense. But what I like about the game is how you can have 3 people together and just kind of go through the Zelda world at your own pace to an extent. But this kind of sets up New Super Mario Bros. Wii, actually, because this game's very competitive. You can pick up the other links and throw them in holes like you can on Mario. You can kind of kill each other, grief each other. You can do stuff like that. It's pretty fun. But what I want to talk about with this is the idea of a Four Swords game being on Wii U as a local multiplayer game. And I know Nintendo is very iffy about whether or not you can have 4 Wii U tablets played at the same time and streamed to. But I think with a 2D game like this, you think it's possible? With just a little something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, you know, not to brag here, but I was at E3, I played the Wii U, and like, you'd be surprised, I think, at how much fun the just having a one secret screen version of these games is. Like, it's there was the Chase Me game where you had the guy holding the Wii U controller had an overhead view of the action and could see the entire labyrinth and the entire maze and just escape the other players. But the other players were playing on a split screen on a TV, and they only had their own view, and so they had to look for you in there. So it was kind of a, I suppose, like Pac-Man versus kind of deal. It was surprisingly fun. Like, I'm really, really hoping that it's going to be part of a some sort of compilation, like whatever ships with the Wii U.
Yeah. And actually, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about what Pikmin 3 could possibly be like on Wii U, where you can, instead of how most people perceive the Wii U controller as the touchscreen being like the HUD with the map and inventory on it, how about the TV be the map, and if, let's say, you're playing Pikmin or a Four Swords game, the people are controlling maybe Olimar and Louie separately on their own controllers, and they glance at the TV just to see a map as to where the other player's at. And same thing for this, you know, it just shows a big overworld map while the separate links on their own controller are doing whatever they want, and kind of reverse what people are expecting from the Wii U. Make the action on the controller and keep, you know, the map and inventory stuff on the TV that everybody shares.
That would be cool. Do you guys think that Nintendo was still planning, like they're still trying to get developers to plan for only one controller? Like,
well, here's my question on that. Is there anything, is it possible with the way a 3DS is built right now, could that possibly interact with a Wii U in, you know, not like streaming the whole game to it, but in a way, like, you know, small stuff?
Yeah, I personally can see that working 3DS to Wii U, but then you're going to have a lot of people saying, oh, what's the point of that? You know, the Wii U controller has a screen. It's just, you're kind of wasting my time here with the 3DS. That's what a lot of people would say, I would think.
I'm all for these types of game experiences. I just don't want to have to buy four of those controllers.
Yeah, that's the
thing. That's my only thing.
Yeah, this is where I'm going with it. Guillaume, you asked, do you think Nintendo about having one controller telling developers only one controller? I think they are. I think retail releases, like big graphical games, kind of like what is it, like Darksiders 2 and the new Assassin's Creed, I think those would be one controller games. I'm thinking maybe, now, whatever their online service, their eShop for Wii U, if they have little indie games, kind of like a 2D Four Swords adventure, I think games like that could support four multiplayer controllers. Maybe they can release a simple Mario Party that has their own controller too. I think it just depends on the kind of power the game's pushing out.
I suppose so. I wish we had data on how many people not only had four Wiimotes, but four nunchucks, because I think that would tell us, well, we would have Nintendo's data, first of all, but yeah. I mean, like, Nintendo probably, like, if people aren't willing to pay the extra $20 to get a nunchuck, then are they going to be willing to pay, like, $50, $60, $70 for extra controllers?
I mean, we have two Wiimotes. The second one came with, what was that game?
Wii Play.
Right. And, two nunchucks, and we just finally got a third with the gold Skyward Sword Wiimote.
Right.
So.
Do you guys? Well, yeah, I wouldn't expect any game to ship with an extra Wii U controller. That's a little bit too big.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't see that happening. But I do see the Wii U controller in certain situations allowing four screens to work together in a case or a scenario like a downloadable Four Swords adventure. But honestly, I know in the future when that system comes out, I'm not going to be able to find four people to get together to do this kind of stuff. And I don't think Nintendo is going to see the value in it. Kind of like how split-screen multiplayer is going away, I don't think Nintendo is going to see value in, you know, four Wii U tablets or whatever the official name of it is going to be, being in the same room together. I think they're going to stick to one tablet and three other Wiimotes. Sadly, I think that's what it's going to stick to.
Didn't we see some weird, like, patent? Yeah, I know that companies are always releasing designs, patents, and all that stuff, but didn't we see something about, like, a touchscreen that attaches to a Wiimote?
I know what you're talking about.
I'm pretty sure that in Iwata Asks, they actually revealed that the Wii U controller, like, initially they wanted to release that for the Wii, and that's why, like, the whole touchscreen, people say, Nintendo is trying to beat Apple or is trying to emulate them, but it was an original idea for the Wii, so.
Right. But maybe the solution could be some, you know, like a Wii Motion Plus, you know, I'm not saying this is a good idea, but, you know, some little crappy touchscreen that you plug into your Wiimotes instead of having to buy a whole other tablet.
That sounds so horrible.
Yeah,
I think that's like the Wii U's equivalent of the classic controller pro or the Circle Pad pro. It's yeah, it's
Yeah.
But getting back to the Game Boy thing a little bit, Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, a game like that, it's they've done interactivity on the game on the Wii, I believe, with Crystal Chronicles. I never jumped into it. I think they had that one where you can play someone on TV with a Wii copy of the game and someone on DS through the internet. You can have
Yeah,
the
is
same
it the
group.
Echoes of
Yeah,
Time?
Echoes of Time. I've
Yep.
never done that.
I have done that.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was fine. I mean,
Was it
it's like
fun?
just like playing, I don't know. It's if as if the person is at the other end of the internet, you know, you don't doesn't really matter what hardware they're on. Looks the
Yeah.
same on your end, so.
The Wii U comparisons between Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles will be easier to draw because what the Game Boy screen does in that game is exactly what people are kind of excited for, or, me personally, I'm excited for what the Wii U controller is going to do. And that's simple stuff like map, inventory management, status effects on yourself, and, kind of like the scan thing in Final Fantasy games when you scan an enemy, it shows up on the screen, their information. There's
Yep.
a one pops up that on the screen for the Crystal Chronicles game for GameCube. But there's kind of a hidden way to choose yourself what you want the screen to show. I believe in the game, in the menu, you can choose what color your little ring shows around you on the GameCube game. Do you guys remember that?
Vaguely, yeah.
Depending on the color you pick, it changes what your Game Boy screen shows. And the game doesn't really describe this. I discovered it on my own. And the best one is clearly, I think, blue. And it shows enemy status. And through that, you can actually see number damage of how much damage you're doing to enemies. And
Oh, wow.
that kind of irked me out in the original game, playing on the GameCube controller, because you're kind of just hitting these people. You don't really know, the damage. You don't really feel the sense of getting any stronger. Because I used to play a lot of PS1 RPGs with numbers. I love numbers in games. And jumping to a game like this with no numbers at all kind of bugged me. And then I actually started playing single player by myself on the Game Boy Advance controller, as opposed to a GameCube controller, because it had that status screen. It showed me what the enemy's HP was every time I hit it, what kind of chunk was taken away. And stuff like that, I think for Wii U can be very helpful. Now, like I mentioned earlier, Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles could have been done without the Game Boy Advances. It could have.
Right.
It would have been a little bit slower. It wouldn't have worked as fast because one person going into inventory would pause the game for everybody. And I think having, the real-time world always running despite your inventory management, I think it made the game a little bit better. And the Game Boy's kind of, made the game feel more special. And I think once I get a Game Boy cable come in through GameStop, I'm gonna boot this game up for a bit just for a little bit of nostalgia because I feel like experienced that before the Wii U. But
If you had, sorry, if you had people with the Game Boy Advances controlling their own, could they potentially, like, could you leave the same screen? Do
no,
you know what I mean?
because you remember it had that little miasma ring thing, and if you walked out of
Oh,
it,
of
you took damage.
course. Right,
Yes,
of course.
that
That was
actually.
how they explained
Yeah,
it,
that's what they explained it. Yeah, keeping it in. And when you played single
right?
player, you had the little Mog following you. Remember
Right,
that?
right, right, right,
It's kind of, that game is a very boring two-player game because
right.
the moment you hit multiplayer, you have to have the Mog goes away and someone has to carry it. So
Yeah.
my best friend and I, we played this game a lot. We each had our own copies. We set TVs up next to each other and grind and occasionally get together on the same TV. And it was just very boring because with two people, one person is the bitch carrying the chalice
Yeah.
the whole time. And if they want to fight, they have to drop it. It's a boring two-player game. It's fantastic with three and four people. As a single-player game, it's fun. But yeah, you don't want to get caught being the bitch when you're playing that game because you're not having much fun. But yeah, that game, it's a classic example of stat management and inventory on a screen other than the one you're looking at on the TV. And I think that, in my opinion, is the best thing going for Wii U. Because I already, mentioned earlier with Tails, I'm a big RPG fan, and I directly see the benefits of Wii U because, I can do all my inventory on the touch screen and handle things that way and mid-fight, mess around with stuff. Maybe there was that one DS game, was it Lost Magic? Or where you had to actually draw the spells on the DS screen? Am I
Might
right?
be.
Yeah, there's this old game I was interested in. But yeah, there's this game you traced spells on the screen and it casted it. Stuff like that has me excited for Wii U and, knowing what I know about Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles almost, what, like 10 years ago, kind of has me excited for what Wii U is about.
Yeah, it could be pretty interesting. The whole connectivity thing, I think Nintendo abandoned during the DS era. Probably, like, do you guys think it might have something to do with the fact that the DS was capable of better graphics? And so, and also it had two screens itself. So, like, what's the point of having, of being tethered to TV when you can basically have the same kind of game but directly on your handheld?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the Game Boy Advance connectivity, you know, influenced DS and also what we're going to see in Wii U. You know, the idea of two screens really changing the way you play. I think Nintendo had that great idea 10 years ago, and people seemed to forget about it, and now it's showing back up again.
Well, again, I didn't have a Game Boy Advance, but what was the maximum multiplayer you could arrange without hooking up to a GameCube?
I think it was four people.
Yeah, four people. Yeah. You can link up four people.
Okay.
Yeah, because it had four swords on the A Link to the Past with four individual ones. But I wanted to mention, because Guillaume, you said you played with the Tingle Tuner on Wind Waker.
Yep.
Now, a lot of people think that, like, we're waiting for a Wind Waker HD remake. How fantastic would it be if we had that remake on Wii U and Tingle Tuner was built into the Wiimote? Because if you I don't know, if have you ever done that, Joe? Have you played with
No.
It's quite funny, because I used to do it by myself, or just have Link stand still and draw enemies towards me and then go on the Game Boy Advance and drop bombs like crazy on the enemies.
You were doing it by yourself?
Yeah,
really?
I used to do it by myself. Yeah, I'd put the controller down and go on the Game Boy Advance and just drop bombs everywhere. It was fantastic. And I think something like that on, if they did remake Wind Waker for Wii U and they added the Tingle Tuner directly to it, that would change the game so much, because it would be nothing but dropping bombs all over the place. I think it would be fantastic.
Yeah, I never did that, I gotta admit. I just passed the GBA to my non-gaming roommate and, you know, let him drop bombs until he got bored. And same thing with Rayman. Although Rayman, I wish I had been playing more. Like, he got bored of that pretty soon as well. But the Rayman 3 had a minigame in it where you would control some sort of a racing car. I think it was a shoe, actually, a floating shoe. Mm-hmm. And on the Game Boy screen, you had this Game Boy this Tetris-like game. Like, the blocks would drop from the top, and you had to create basically a highway. Mm-hmm. You had to create a path for the other guy to race on and to get to the end. And we didn't manage to complete it. I don't know how many levels there were. I don't know. But, like, just the, how do you call that? The asymmetry of that kind of multiplayer game. Like, that was really, really interesting.
That sounds pretty fun, actually.
Yeah.
I want to mention one last thing on this connectivity. It doesn't tie into Wii U, but it's kind of just, you know, a little guilty thing I used to do back in the day on Animal Crossing. Guillaume, you said on Negative World you have played the Game Boy Advance connectivity on Animal Crossing. Have you tried it?
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Have you ever used it to dupe money by any chance?
No.
All right. There's this little trick my little brother and I discovered. If you remember, you take the Kappa, I believe, the little boat, down to the island, and that's how you access the Game Boy Advance portion of the game. Well, if you go to the island and you drop items and you return to your regular town, the items are stored on the Game Boy Advance. You turn your GameCube off, turn it back on. There you go. You duped your money. And we used to dupe about $100 million, 100 million bells doing that, and it just left the whole entire town. That was a really good summer day. We used to be really bored in the summer.
Wow.
I live out in the middle of nowhere, so in the summertime we used to do that and have a lot of fun.
Yeah, it would have been a little bit too tedious for me. Also, didn't you have to sit through Musetti?
Yes. But you kind of grew immune to that guy after a while.
No, like, the functionality that I liked most with the GBA connectivity was the whole send the NES game that you've unlocked, send it to your GBA and play on that.
Yes, that
so
was good.
Even though I don't especially like Balloon Fight or, you know, those kinds of games, I would still send it to the Game Boy, and the drawback was that it was stored in the temporary memory, and so when you turned off the Game Boy, the NES game was gone, and I wish that this element of connectivity, sending games to the handheld, you know, like Nintendo had, I wish Nintendo had decided to keep that, because now we've got the Virtual Console, and we've got it on two systems, now we have it on the 3DS as well, and we can't transfer games, and it would be so easy, and it would be so nice of them to do it. I'm sorry, Nintendo, but I'm not rebuying shit.
I am not buying anything on my 3DS that I already bought on my Wii. And they already have Club Nintendo. You know, those games show up on Club Nintendo. Your 3DS is tied to it. It would be very easy for Nintendo to say, hey, you bought this already. Even if you had to call customer support and they gave you a code. And they're like, oh, yes, you did buy it. Here's a code. You know, sorry for the inconvenience. They don't even do that. You know, I'm happy we have the Ambassador games, because I probably would have rebought Zelda and Zelda 2 at least. But the idea of paying for a game that I already bought on Wii really bugs me, and they should have fixed that. Their lack of foresight, and I don't blame just Nintendo, because I have a bad feeling the same thing might happen with these HD consoles. I have a feeling some owners are going to get screwed over with digital content.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I hope not. The encouraging part is that DSi purchases were carried over to the 3DS, at least most of them. Like, there's maybe like a dozen exceptions, but not that many people bought DSi stuff, so...
Did I hear correct that did they confirm for Wii U that there will be some sort of, you know, like, profile?
Yeah, I think so.
I think they said you'd be able to create a profile, have separate profiles. And I think I remember someone... Was it on our forum? I can't remember the user, the person who had the broken Wii, who sent it in, and they wouldn't fix it because it was hacked.
Via Vescaphone.
And, I remember he said the person on customer support told him, you know, it's okay if you can't play virtual consoles on Wii because you'll be able to transfer them to Wii U. And I'm thinking that's just a customer support guy being an idiot.
But since they did it with the DS, I'm really optimistic.
I hope. I have a lot of virtual console games, and I would love to transfer it over. But we'll see.
Because you would think that they would want to... You know, because if they kept pulling that, you know, generation after generation, I mean, you'd think they would want to not, like, damage the perception of their own. Like, right now, everyone loves the idea of virtual console and stuff like that. So,
I think
tired of that.
They can get away with it with Wii U is if all the virtual console games get, like, a little HD update or upgrade to make it look a little bit crisper. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I was much less cynical about the NES games coming to the 3DS when they were actually 3D classic remakes, you know? At least some work was done on it, so I can understand why you're not just giving this away.
Yeah.
But just the plain ROMs without anything done to them, I'm not paying twice. I'm sorry.
Have you guys played one of the 3D remakes?
Excitebike, which we all got, I think, well, you didn't get because you didn't
have
3DS in time.
You're not really missing out.
Yeah, and I think whenever Nintendo put out the PlayCoin games, was it Xevious, the one you can get? I would check my 3DS, but I don't want to have to exit out of Tails. But I have that, too, but I can't really see 3D that well. It hurts my eyes, so I didn't really buy 3D classics.
I got Twinbee, and it looks good. It's not a very good game, though. Like, it's not as good as the Daytona Twinbee game on the Virtual Console and the Wii. To my topic, and I was originally going to talk about LAN parties and stuff, and I was boring myself just trying to think of something to say about them. But yeah, like we're not going to talk about LAN parties after all. We're going to talk about party games. Let's do it this way. Like, do you guys have any recommendations, or like, what are your best party game stories?
Mario Party 1 in my past. I love
I
that game.
had I had never played a Mario Party game before the eighth one that, and we didn't even finish a game. We were so bored.
When I was younger, I have an older brother who's 2 years older than me, and my best friend is my age, and he has an older brother that's 2 years older. So we spent a lot of time, you know, my brother and his brother. We all played an N64 game multiplayer together from Wayne Gretzky Hockey 95 to Mario Tennis, Super Smash Brothers, Mario Party 1. A lot of experience in four-player N64 games when I was younger.
Four controller ports.
For the party games, I know the Wayne Gretzky Hockey was the best. Even though I'm a really huge hockey fan, I hate sports games, and I used to get my butt handed to me in every hockey game we used to play. So I don't really like talking about that one that much. But Mario Party, though. Joe, have you played Mario Party with people?
Yeah, but my first one was, I think it was 6, I want to say. Yeah, I think it was GameCube, but we didn't get it until we already had the Wii, so.
Yeah. My only Mario Party experience is 1 and 4, because that's the first GameCube one. And a lot of good memories with those, but I don't want to stick to Mario Party that much. I want to, because we all, you know, Mario Party's Nintendo, we've talked about that stuff a lot. It's Mario Party, 4 people getting together, having fun, and having a good time playing mini games. But
I gotta say, I was at least surprised when we got 6. The, how can I put this, like, the range of people that were open to playing that game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I would find, like, some people, we didn't do it too often, but there'd be people who were over, and we'd be looking for something to do, and they'd be, like, not gamers at all. And they enjoyed Mario Party.
Yeah, I used to get my little sister to play Mario Party with, you know, my other siblings. So, yeah, always had people ready to play Mario Party. It's the go-to party game, in my opinion. Yeah.
And aren't you guys annoyed by the the random chance thing, but also the fact that winning the minigames doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to win the whole round, you know?
When I first played that game, I had no idea that's what it was about, and I actually won. I was really shocked. I won, and I didn't win any mini games. I actually won, and it blew my mind.
Personally, I think that the best party games are probably kind of trivia kind of like games. I've been playing a little bit of what's the WiiWare one? TV Show King 2 on the WiiWare. It's pretty good. Like, it's got these kinds of gimmicky mini games where, sure, like, you're gonna have 4 choice of answers, but they're completely blocked, and you have to kind of scratch them with the Wii Remote's pointer. So everyone is just, like, scratching away, trying to discover not only, you know, what the 4 choices are, but which one is the right one. And little, you know, gimmicky fun like that, and that can't be really replicated exactly in an actual trivia board game. So that's always fun. And recently I've also played Guilty Party, and I don't think that game sold all that well, but that's a shame. It's a little bit technically unsound, to be kind to it. Like, it's pretty janky. There's a lot of mini games that don't really quite work because the pointer lag is so bad, and the animations are, they're really not smooth. So that's a disappointment. Like, if you play that game, I suggest putting the mini games on easy, because the real fun is just going around the mansions or whatever setting that you're in, and it's basically Disney's version of Clue, and you have to find different clues, and you have to deduce if the person is short or tall, or, you know, slim or round, and or male or female.
Yeah, I was wondering about Guilty Party. How, because we've looked at picking that game up any number of times, but we still never have. What can you, like, control the like time commitment for each session of the game? Like, is there a way to play like a short game or a longer game or anything like that?
If you can't decide exactly how long the game is gonna take, you can at least choose a smaller mansion and fewer clues.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of the clues that you're going to pick up that don't actually help you solve anything. So if you reduce the number of clues, then the game is going to be going much faster. And no, it's just a great game. Like, unfortunately, you have to unlock a bunch of stuff before you can play competitively. But the main quest or the main game is you can play through it co-op. And so we did that. It takes about maybe 6 hours. But you can save, you know, there's about like 10 to 12 scenarios. And you follow a story that it makes absolutely no sense and probably thinks it's funnier than it actually is. But like once you can play competitively, like that's pretty cool too.
They kind of there's only one Wii party game I really want to try that I've yet to. It's I can't remember what it's called, Dokkenpo Kingdom or something, that 4-player board game RPG.
I think that Mr. Mustache would know.
Dokapon or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, something weird. I can't remember. It came out a couple years ago. It's a cool board game RPG. It's you're competing against each other. You level up and everything. That's something I would be interested in trying someday.
Oh, but speaking of people that I saw at the meetup, we did play and we did talk about WarioWare. Mega Micro Games, the GameCube version of WarioWare that was designed for parties. And that game was just a blast, at least the first time we played it. Because the first time we played it, like, everything was new, everything was really hilarious and unexpected.
Yeah.
I've never laughed so much playing a game. And I wasn't the only one. But then we tried to play it a second time, and like one new person played with us. And everyone was dead serious. Because we had played all of the minigames before, so we knew exactly, like, there were no surprises anymore, and we were just in it to win.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was the strangest thing. But I still think I recommend it. Like, it's going to be a little bit less fun, perhaps, for, like, if you own the game and you have random people over, and it's their first time playing it, like, perhaps they're going to have more fun than you are. There's modes in that game that are hectic enough that there's still going to be complete, like, reversals of situations that are, you know, it's probably, like, a good thing. Like, just get drunk and play that game, and you should have some fun. Because there is at least one mode where if you fail, like, if you win every minigame, if you get the most points, you're going to play a final minigame, and if you lose it, everyone else wins.
Hmm.
That happened to me. And I was pissed.
Joe, have you ever had any LAN games or party game experience?
Are we talking about LAN games?
Or party, but I guess we can go into both. Because technically a LAN game is a big party game.
True.
Yeah, sure.
Well, let me tell the Xbox LAN story then, because
yeah,
that's actually a really good...
I have good Xbox LAN stories, too.
Well, so I, my junior year in college, my two suite mates, they both had Xboxes, and I don't remember if they both had Halo or both had to have Halo or whatever, but so what we would do was set one up with a TV in one room and then close the door and have the other room with another TV and another box. And I mean, we used to have, the amazing thing about that experience was that, and this is why I always feel that the debate over games that are hardcore or casual is so meaningless and silly, because we would have people from all up and down the hall would come, and we would have like 4-on-4 for hours at a time, and there were crazy things like girls playing and like people who had clearly like never picked up a game controller before. Like, I don't know if you guys, and did any of you watch The Office? Have you ever seen?
Oh, I love that show. Fantastic.
Okay. Do you remember when Jim is at the other branch and they're playing Call of Duty?
Yeah, I remember that.
And he's like, and he's just like, his character is just stuck in the corner, like facing, just like shooting into the sky or whatever.
Yeah.
That was this one friend of mine. And it was so just hilarious. You just pitied him every time you would just walk up behind him and he's just like, you know, he can't even face forward. And you just shoot him in the back or whatever. But we all enjoyed it. Even he would just laugh when that
would
happen.
Yeah, the guy who would just stand there with bad aim, we used to make him just camp at the flag and just shotgun somebody if they used to walk in.
But that reminds me of a story. I'm not sure. I might have told it already on the podcast. I hope not. But tell me if I have, and then I'll edit it out. but yeah, like, I went to this Wii party to friends of my girlfriend, and I had for a mission, like, her friend, her boyfriend, like, always won at Mario Kart Wii, and like, her friend wanted me to beat him at that game. So we ended up playing Mario Kart Wii, and I just crushed everyone. And yeah,
you were the ringer.
Yeah, you had some people who were like just smashing against walls and just falling into every pit that they possibly could. And I was like boosting from the start, and I was doing, you know, the when you're drifting and boosting, like no one else was doing that. Like the guy who was supposedly so good at Mario Kart Wii used the automatic. And so, like, all these more advanced techniques. And I had been playing with the Negative World crew every week in the tournament. So it was all fresh in my mind. I was very, very competitive. But after a while, I just, like, I had to slow down and stop using the boosts and, you know, play badly, because I felt so self-conscious. I felt like... Oh my God! I'm the guy who's taking this way too seriously.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. I don't.
Yeah, and I actually ended up, you know, like we had played Just Dance 2 just before, and that was completely new to me, and I was having way more fun playing that actually, just because it was a little bit more even, you know.
Yeah, my LAN party, to bring it back to Halo, I never owned an original Xbox. I had all my friends in high school did. I was the GameCube guy, you know, big Nintendo nerd. But kind of like what Joe used to do, we used to do 8-on-8, though, with Halo. We had a good friend, I think he actually works for Sony now, PlayStation, who owned an Xbox HUD adapter for cables and 4 100-foot cables. And we used to put 4 Xbox together, 2 upstairs and 2 in the basement, with 8-on-8 action, playing Capture the Flag, Blood Gulch, I think the map was, and the most competitive stuff. The matches would literally go on for about 2 hours straight of nonstop LAN party, and then the moment it ended, the team that won would run up to the other team's room and just do nothing but talk shit for the rest of the night. we used to do that, I think, every time we had a 3-day break off school in high school. You know, 3-day weekend would be our LAN days, and we did that for... Halo 2, and actually, one of my good friends, we both owned network adapters for GameCube, because I loved playing Phantasy Star Online, and he just loved buying Nintendo shit. But when the LAN party would end and everybody would stop playing Halo, we'd hook up Mario Kart, and we'd do the LAN party with that and get a couple people, and I had a lot of fun doing that. That's my only experience with Double Dash, though. I had never owned the game. I've only played it through LAN party, and that was a very interesting way to experience that game. And that's still the only time I've ever played that game. But yeah, I think I might be one of the very few people who LAN partied a Nintendo game.
Well, you had a bunch of dedicated people who not only did that, but they cracked the code or whatever, and they managed to do this warp pipe thing. It was called to put Mario Kart Online when Nintendo wouldn't do online. So, but you haven't done that, have you?
No, I never did, because I never had, you needed 2 internet jacks, I believe, on the back of your PC, and I never had that. I knew how to make the cable for it because I had Cisco classes in high school, but I didn't have that extra network card on the back of my PC to filter it through.
Speaking of online, yeah, I think we're going to end on this. Like, are you the kind of people who are asking for Mario Party to go online? Because I can't imagine that being any fun.
At first, whenever the DS came out, they had a Mario Party for that, correct?
Yep.
I thought, like, you know, why isn't this online? You know, Nintendo can do online. It's a multiplayer game. And back then, I was a little naive. I used to think, you know, if a game's multiplayer, it should be online. You know, it makes sense. But now I look back and I'm like, God, I was such an idiot. Mario Party, you know, I believe Nintendo now. Mario Party is one of those games where you have to be around people playing it. And that's one of those games where if you had a headset online, you would be talking shit nonstop. And that's not very fun. I think Mario Party is a 4-person in 1-room game, not an online game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think that's where those games really shine. I mean, the whole idea is having a bunch of other people in the room and, like, you know, snacks and drinks.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe other people talking about other stuff and, you know.
Yeah. I think, and it kind of stems to Mario Kart, too, where when I play online, sometimes it doesn't really feel like I'm playing online. It just feels like Mario Kart. I think for Wii U, I think this would be a great idea for the controller. If you're playing Mario Kart online, have that camera on the controller facing your face, and on the Wii U controller showing everybody else's face and doing all their voices. I think that would be a great way to connect
people. That's
pretty
cool.
Mario Kart.
The problem with that kind of thing, though, is... private parts.
Yeah, for, well, make it a friend-only thing.
Friends, yeah.
Yeah, friend-only. And if someone says, like, you know, the game, you know, what if there's not enough power in Wii U to do that? Mario Kart doesn't have to be a game that looks like Gran Turismo. You know, I don't... You know, you can take Mario Kart Wii and just make it slick and smooth and HD, and that's perfect. And, you know, do that video chat thing.
So that was the Negative World Podcast. If you're a first-time listener especially, we really want to hear about you. And if you've got comments, please come on the board. Come to negativeworld.org. And there's going to be a thread associated with this podcast episode. So go in there, subscribe first, of course, and tell us what you really think. We can take it. You can also, if you don't want to subscribe to Negative World for some reason, you can reach us through the Facebook page. Simply search for negativeworld.org. And if not Facebook, then there's also Twitter. And just look for @negative_world. Please, if you're listening to the MP3 version of this podcast, know that there is an enhanced version with chapter stops. If you've got an iPod, an iPhone Touch, or something like that, just look on iTunes for Negative World Podcast Enhanced, and you're going to find it. We've got tons of good content on Negative World. For instance, Mr. Mustache, the beloved Rob, has written his first review, and as can be expected from that guy, it's an old JRPG, Dragon Warrior 2. So go read that if you're interested at all, and you should be if you're not. Thank you, Joe and Anton, for doing this with me.
Thanks for having me.
Hopefully I can come back on sometime soon.
Yeah, I hope so. You guys are naturals. I encourage everyone out there to come join us on the show sometime, because we really accept anyone. like all you have to do is be a member of Negative World and be active. Like, post some stuff, you're gonna get noticed, you're gonna be demoted to level -2, and from then on you're gonna be able to join the podcast. Alright, so thank you both for taking your time to be here, and thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Later.
And once you do that, you... Sorry, I'm being distracted. I'm... Oh, what the hell?
You're going to describe what's going on.
Okay, you guys, this is pretty cool. Actually, the RFN guys are recording right now. Like,
oh,
they just
no
started.
Way.
And they said, howdy, hi. And because I was on their podcast last week... I'm in that group, so they're...
We should do a very quick cross chat with everybody together for a second and put them on both the shows, but split up the conversation so you have to hear both shows.
I'm gonna ask them to drop me from, like, it's unfortunate, but this is awkward. I'm recording.
You know, we have to keep this in the final.
Well, it's going to be like in the bloopers, of course. Drop me from this group. That's funny. And James Jones seems to be absent, so
Well, they should have me go over there and fill his shoes for RPGs. I can.
Anyway.
I'll rant about Tales of the Abyss for a bit in his
All
style.
right. What the hell was I talking about?